Hi there, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Today, I want to talk about the inner and the outer you. Yes, you know, everybody, not just the famous, has both a public and a private face. Those two versions of ourself are never completely reconciled. Nor would most of us want them to be. Our interior life, our soul, our truest sense of ourselves, whatever you call it, is too difficult, and changing a thing to summarize early or share widely, when the gap between the public face and the private self becomes so big a gap, people go into crisis. The split inside you becomes intolerable. You know what I'm talking about. You feel like you're living a life of a lie. You become reckless. You partly out of self-hatred because you don't like your behavior, but also because you want to put the warring sides of yourself back together, even if the cost is huge. Therapists have big words for it, but let's settle it. Everybody wants to, on some level, stop being a phony. Let's look at Tiger Woods. I know you must be sick of hearing it. He clearly was so sick of being phony that he drove into a tree, risked blowing up his marriage and half his golf empire, and turned the most reverend name in contemporary sports into a national joke. Throughout his life, the tension between his private self and his enormously profitable, perfect public image had grown until the gap was unbearable. People made him like a Christ. They said, "Oh, Tiger Woods," as if he was an icon. From him, you've seen the anger in brief bursts, like a boiling kettle letting off steam. The process took years, but finally, Woods blew the whole thing up when he says, "I own it, I did it. Nobody else." You could call it an addiction. Oh, he was a sexual addict. Is that what the issue is? Is that what addiction is? An attempt to make peace between the two parts of you, between the part of you that feels real and the part of you that's not real. Is that what the attempt is? Let's throw a drug in the middle. Maybe we'll find a harmony. Why would one of the world's most public people cheat on his wife with a number of women over a multi-year period, do it indiscreetly, that he was almost certain to get caught and shamed? Why would anyone, much less the logical, disciplined Woods, act so destructively for so long a period of time, as if he was saying, "Please catch me. Please." But now that we have this apology and all this change, we have to go back to the original question. Is it possible for a person to be their real selves? And by their real selves, meaning that their inner world matches their outer world. In the studio with me today, Stephanie Dumber. Stephanie, what was that thing that I got from Mahatma Gandhi? The harmony of what? Three things? What was it? Someone gave me a gift.
I think it was... It was speaking about what you think, what you say,
and what you are.
And what you are all in harmony.
That's
or
the
you
goal.
Strive to that. That's the ideal.
What you think.
What you say.
What you say.
And how you are.
And how you are in harmony. Nice goal, don't you think? How many of you deal with that? How many of you deal with the issue of being different on the inside than you are on the outside? Are there parts of yourself that you hide from everyone and that you know about and you feel bad about? Well, everybody has, not everybody, but many people have the secret self. Remember they talk about the secret Santa? Everybody's got a secret self somewhere, part that nobody knows about. And almost every personality has it. Sometimes you find it like in the perfectionist. You know, a person's a perfectionist and they're trying to make everything perfect. Their secret self is that they feel imperfect. They go around the world being critical of everybody and everything, trying to make perfection. But their secret is that the imperfection is what they feel about themselves. So you see them being perfectionistic and you respond to their perfectionistic criticism. What you don't know is that they're really feeling this way about themselves. Or how about the pleaser? The person who wants to make everybody happy. They just want to give so they can make you happy. Right? And they give away themselves. And what they're doing on the outside, they look like they're a very pleasing person. But in the inside, they're a person dying to be loved, hoping that by pleasing others, they will eventually get loved. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're talking about the two sides, the difference between the inner and the outer self. And in not too short a time, we're going to be taking your calls today at 212-209-2900. We'll be taking your calls addressing these issues as well. Then there's that one person you meet who always has to be unique. No, there's the one who always has to be a performance person. They're performers, you know, they are concerned about how they look and what good a job they do. But what they feel on the inside is that they look terrible and that they cannot do the job. And then there's the unique person. The person who always wants to be unique because inside they feel absolutely the same as everybody else. And they don't feel unique. So they got to wear special clothing and do special things. Because there's disharmony between the two. A man once came to me and he said to me, I want to do workshops, Armand, so I could get well known. He said, what would I do a workshop on? And I said, well, what's the thing that you know the least about? What are you the worst at in your life? And he said, relationships. He said, I'm lousy at relationships. I do workshops on relationships. Because we tend to teach the thing we need to learn the most. Whenever you meet anybody who's a specialist in something, you say, that's their Achilles heel. Almost invariably. Private people, very, very private people. They're very private on the inside, and on the outside, they don't let anybody in. And they look private and they become experts, but inside, they're curmudgeons, not happy folk. Frightened people, people who are all over the place, who are doing everything in every direction. They seem to be having such a good time. These are the people who have so many different appetites. And what you don't see is what failures they feel like on the inside, and they can't sit still. Or you have the people who control everything, and they're constantly controlling, because internally they feel like they're constantly out of control. And of course you have the peacemaker, the person who always wants to make peace out of everything. And why are they doing it? Because they are covering the rage inside. Rage inside, there's a really good question. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. What do you think is the thing that people hide the most on the inside? Do you think it's their rage, or do you think it's their sexuality? What are people most embarrassed by about themselves? Many people were brought up by parents who let them know that if they were angry, they were bad. They shouldn't be angry. You shouldn't be angry. You'll hurt your mother if you're angry. And so they were given this, never get angry. And anger is evil. And if you feel anger, you're going to kill somebody. So there are many of you who believe that your angry self is evil, wrong, the place of the devil. And then there are many of you who feel the same way about your sexuality. Because you keep your sexuality private, you have sexual fantasies, sexual ideas, things you think about that you don't want to share with anybody else. Again, that split between your real self and your fake self. There are people who are living so strongly for the self-image, but they have a terrible self-image. A terrible image of themselves. You would find some of the most beautiful and the people in the world think that they're unattractive. They think there's something really wrong with them. And there are other people who are always hiding their history. There's something in your history that you did that you're ashamed of. Yes, shame. Shame is a repository of a split self. Having a lot of shame. Shameful things. Things that you've done that you're really ashamed of. That you don't want to admit to anybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. So we see Tiger Woods coming to task. And we see each time they bust a politician and they say, look, he's got a sexual history. Look at what he did in the past. We're always surprised and we're always saying, what's the matter with that person? How could they be that way? But clearly, people want to come down to earth. People would love to be in harmony. What a way to live. Live your entire life hiding yourself. So then you fall in love with somebody. Who does that somebody love? Do they love you or this outside picture? So how could you ever feel loved if you're never real? Good question, don't you think? Somebody wrote an article recently about cell phones. I thought it was kind of interesting. It was a therapist who said, you know, when I have patients come in my office, she said, they have their cell phones, and they're always apologizing for getting cell calls. She said, but I love watching them get a cell phone call. She said, because in the cell phone, when a person gets on their cell phone, you hear a real them talking to real people, as opposed to the selves that they present to the therapist. People are not usually very honest with their therapist. They are. They mean to be honest. But they hide parts. They want approval. But when they get on that cell phone, you hear them talking in ways that tell you great secrets. Stephanie told me about somebody who she overheard in a conversation, and she said it was like we would have never gotten to this issue had I not heard them doing this behavior. So there are parts of us sneaking up all over the place. In fact, if you, like I, like to listen in on people's cell phones, which I do, if people are in the streets or if people are sitting in a cafe next to me, I like to listen to their phone calls. I like to hear them talking because I'm hearing a more honest self. I'm hearing them talking in a certain way that would only be privileged. They think is a privileged communication, but of course it's not if you're talking out loud so everybody could hear you. You know, it's an announcement to the world. 212-209-2900. 212-209-2900. So a man like Richard Friedman explored the puzzling world of self-defeating behavior. And he asked this question. Why do people do such things as to defeat themselves and their own will? That's his question. And he said there seems to be another hidden psychological reward for doing it. Because once you betray yourself, you can always feel like the victim. And he associated victimology, being a victim all the time, with people who betray themselves. And he said the following. He said, for as long as a person is not true to themselves, they always feel like a victim. And people who are victims in the world, they just can't get by because they're always blaming somebody else for their existence. So I'd like to talk to you about these issues. Your real self, your not real self. So 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille.
Nope.
And you could call in now, my friends. This is our time today. I'm going to try to do as much of our call today on the air, on the callers with you. You know, people have relationships with their bodies. Did you ever think about your relationship to parts of your body? Now think about your hands. How do you see your hands? What do you think of your hands? Do you like your hands? Take a look at them right now. Look at both sides. Are they familiar? Do you remember them when you were a kid? Did you ever look at them as a child? You don't remember them, right? What's your association with your hands? Are they friends? You feel friendly towards your hands? Do you have a different relationship with your right hand and your left hand? I think that there are, if people would look at every part of their bodies, they would find that they have an association of both pleasures and wounds with different parts of their bodies. And if you would think of each part, your eyes, how have your eyes done over time? How do you feel about your eyes? How do you feel about your eyes? What do you think is your relationship with your eyes? You know, what do you think, Steph? Do you think people have different relationships with their body parts over time?
Well, depending on if they work well for people. For me, my eyes started going at the age of 40, like many of us. When we hit a certain age, we have to use reading glasses. So I think depending on what you do with your eyes, if you have to wear glasses, if you have to tend to things, contacts, you have a different relationship. So if you don't see naturally without some kind of glasses or contacts, I'm sure you're going to have a unique relationship with yourself and your eyes and the way you look at yourself.
Do you think your eyes betray you over time? You know, it's like your back, your body, your belly. You know, these things kind of like, what are you doing? Why aren't you the way you used to be when you were vital?
Yeah, I would say a lot of people have those experiences when they age. And like you said earlier, when you're young, most of these things work for us all, and we just take it for granted. So as we age, I imagine we start to really look at things when we can and see if they're still working really well. And many of us, and I know a lot of listeners, like to take care of themselves. So this is a good audience for people who like to tend to their health and their body. And
okay.
Yeah.
Let's take one of your calls, 212-209-2900. Armando Milhaj, you're on the air.
How you doing?
Good, good, good.
My name is Michael Harris. I'm the Archangel Michael. If you Google me, that's what I am. And I just like to talk about what you were saying about people that feel like they're a victim. And I feel like I'm a domestic victim in this country because I've been through a lot in my life. I've been stopped for being a black man. I've been in a war. Situation where I fought a war. I had my son, he was killed in New York, and to me it felt like it was a conspiracy because they just took his body and they just buried him so quick. They didn't even do a thorough investigation. And I just feel like I've really been a victim in this world, especially in the United States of America, where I laid my life on the line for these people and they treat me like I'm not anything. Therefore, I do feel like I'm a victim. I feel like I'm a domestic victim in this world, in this United States of America.
Now, that's a pretty difficult thing for you to be in, and I fully understand. You know, and you feel that way, and of course, it's like carrying a dark cloud around. So on the inside, you're very resentful. On the outside, you're a victim. But there's a problem with the victim position. The problem with the victim position is it always gives you justification for wrath. And like you say, you call yourself the archangel, like the vengeance person. Difficult way to be. You know, a difficult way to live. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. Hello there.
Armand?
Yes.
How you doing? My name is Jack.
Hello, Jack.
We've spoken before, but never in the condition I'm in right now.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Are you in a bad condition?
Yeah, I'm in a real bad condition.
Tell me about it.
Well, it's a relationship issue. You mentioned that word before, and that's the reason I called in.
Radio, turn it off, please.
Turn off your radio in the background.
Okay, well, give me a second, please.
Sure.
Is that better?
Yes.
I mean, if I were to sort of self-diagnose myself, I believe I have real serious codependency issues. I'm involved with somebody right now that I can't really get close to because she really doesn't want to. She wants to be friends, and I understand where she's coming from. She's been clean and sober for 12 years. She's in a program, and her sponsor feels that she's not ready for a relationship. I've known this girl for 20 years. 20 years ago we met. We were both in our height of acting out. I was acting out in several different ways, not addicted to drugs or alcohol, but in other ways. And she was doing her thing, and yet we still had some sort of relationship. And when that ended, I was a basket case like I am again 20 years later. I've been in therapy. She caused me, not caused, she's the reason I went into therapy. I went to Naranon and Al-Anon and then went into seeing a therapist for 4.5 years. About a year ago, I found a need to go back to this therapist because of other issues that I had to deal with in life, also revolving around a female. On the week before Valentine's Day, this girl from 20 years ago came back into my life. We got together. It's a distance relationship, which I thought would be a healthy thing. She lives in Philadelphia, and I live in Kew Gardens. So I was proud to be able to get together with somebody on a real meaningful relationship where it wasn't just based on sex or intimacy. It was that plus dialogue and companionship and all the rest of the things that lovey-dovey things lovey-dovey people have. We have it. She loves me. She tells me she loves me. So she came up here on Valentine's Day after me having sent her a Valentine's card. She got on a bus and came up and spent a night with me and then went back to Philly. 2 weekends ago, I went down, spent 3 nights with her. And like I say, there's a big age difference. And I asked her, you know, I don't look the same as I used to. And she still does. She's in her 40s. I'll be 70 next month. She's 47 on Monday. Tuesday's her birthday, on the 30th. And, you know, so I went out, you know, and asked her if that's an issue. And she says, yeah, it's part of it. But the biggest issue is that she can't be in a relationship because she knows he's going to mess it up. And I respect that. And I am the last person on the planet that wants to interfere with her recovery. But in the meantime, I haven't slept for 2 nights. My stomach is like hollow and hurting, and I'm obsessing with her for the last 24 hours. And that's my story.
Hey, Jack, there's nobody else around that you're seeing. There's nobody else who has the qualities that she has, right?
Correct.
She's got a thing. She's got youth in a certain way, beauty, physical attraction, and she's got things that nobody else has. So you've got your own vitality invested in your relationship with her, even though she's saying to you, this is not what I want.
No, she's not saying that.
Well, she's saying to you, I don't want to have this serious relationship.
That's correct.
I don't want to have this intimate relationship.
Correct.
And what happens is a man like you starts trying to get her to pay attention to you by guilting her, by almost telling her, but look at how good things are, and look at how this should be, and look at what you should do.
Mm-hmm.
And there is nothing that'll drive a person away more than that kind of guilt and shame.
Yeah. That's behind me. I know. I did do that, yes.
So this is the place where you have to deal with your own pain.
I'm trying.
And in order to do that, you have to let her go.
Mm-hmm.
You have to, in your mind, be willing to let her part. I've known many a man who have been in the same situation, and they had to say to themselves, I'm going to let her go.
I'm not mad enough to do it, Armand.
Not yet.
How much more suffering do I have to go through in order to
I don't know if it's suffering. You may have to guess the suffering may be the reward. You know, the suffering itself may be your reward. Because I wish you were with a group of men I know who talk about this all the time.
Mm-hmm.
There's a trick in your mind. There's a mental trick going on here. That's putting all of your eggs in this one basket.
Yes, there is.
And we want to get to the bottom of that trick.
What do you mean by a trick?
It's a trick. It's a way that you're fooling your mind. You're saying that your life, your being, it's all around this issue.
Well,
that's why you're so depressed.
I hear you. A large percent, no doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt. Yeah, it is. I mean, I'm...
And it can't be. You're a vital man. You know?
But it could be if it... You know, it could be.
No relationship is a total issue.
No. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that at all. I'm fully aware. I have a life. I have daughters and people that love me, and I love them back. I mean, it's not yeah. that yeah, I'm putting all my eggs in that basket, but I'm putting 70% of them in. You know,
I understand, and I really do understand. But I wish. Well, let me ask you something about your dad. Was your dad ever available to you?
No, absolutely not.
That's what I'm afraid of.
Yeah, I know where that. I got that issue dealt with in therapy, but that doesn't help me today.
No, it hasn't been dealt with. Because you wouldn't be in this spot if it was dealt with.
How do you deal with that?
I don't know.
I can intellectually tell you for sure he wasn't.
Yeah.
How do you get deeper into it so it isn't affecting me?
Well.
And I was a mama boy on top of it.
I know, I could hear that. And this is what you're saying. I'm a mama boy. And what I want you to do is
Please.
Be Jack the man.
Yeah, yeah.
And Jack, I got, you know, it's too much for us to do here on the
phone.
Yeah,
I know.
No, but I would love to talk with you about this more, if we could.
Tell me how and when and where.
Just, send me an email and I'll try to send you some information.
I'm computer illiterate. I don't have that.
Mm. Well, there's another issue. Now, let me tell you about that issue.
Go ahead.
Computer illiteracy is generally the sign of just what you said, a mama-dependent person.
No, well, I have a learning disability. I can't spell. I have a learning disability. I'm not dyslexic, but I can't spell Armand even. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't even go that way.
Okay, I think you're giving me a reason, but it's not a good enough reason.
Right, so I should get a computer then? Is that
yes, I think that you should learn computers.
Well, I've been online. I do, I'm capable of it, but I don't have one in my own house. I can go online. I'm capable of doing that when it's in somebody else's house. And
what I'm talking about is the trick. And what's happening as I'm talking to you is you're coming up with reason after reason why not,
Mm-hmm.
And what's doing is it's freezing you in a certain position. You need to be able to make some kind of settlement with the man inside you, and it's not far away.
Well,
it's not far, Jack, because I can hear you. I have great respect for you.
Yeah.
It's not far. But when men die over women, there's something wrong.
No doubt. I've been doing this my whole life. It's not the first time. It's the second time round with her. 20 years ago, I've been in therapy for 5 years, and I'm right back where I called my therapist this morning to make an appointment with her again for next week.
Wrong therapist, because it's a her. You need a man.
Yeah.
You need a man you could trust.
That's a good point. Let me ask you this, and I'll end in closing. I know I've been on a long, and I really appreciate the time and effort you're putting into me at this point. Do you think that medication of any sort would be beneficial? Because I do suffer from anxiety and depression. I'm fully aware of both of those things in my life.
I think when a person is not willing to do the work to get underneath it, when they don't try the real thing, medication becomes one of the possible solutions. But your obsessive nature would be somewhat touched by an antidepressant, but I don't think it's the answer. I think you want to fix this for good.
I do. A good male therapist is the way to go.
A good male therapist is the way to go. You get in touch with me, and I will locate some for you and tell you where I think you might go.
Okay, Armand, I really appreciate your input.
Jack, I'm on your side.
As always, I know you are. You're on everybody's side, and you're a beautiful human being.
Well,
I wish
like
you could rub off on me from your voice into my head. But it's a real hard. My stomach is just. I can't believe what I'm going through. I just can't believe I'm going through this at my age. It just doesn't leave you.
It makes sense that it comes up now because you're getting ready for the next leap. There's another phase coming, and it's a phase where you're no longer mama's child, but you're your own child.
Yeah, but how many years is it going to take to work on that to get that?
Oh, probably about 3 months.
By seeing a male therapist.
I think it would be the right thing if you could find the right person.
Yeah, well, it's like going fishing.
Well,
who do you know who's
get in touch? Thank you.
Thank you, Armand.
Sure. This is Armand DeMille with you at the Positive Mind. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll take more of your calls at 212-209-2900. We'll take a short break. And this is Armand DeMille back with you at the Positive Mind here at WBAI 99.5 FM. We've got some changes in our music thing here. We're trying to work it out, but there are some new requirements about what kind of music we can play, how long we can play it, how we have to file it, and all that stuff, and we're just learning. So for the time being, you hear me playing short pieces. And then we'll get back to what we were doing. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille with Stephanie Dombra. Let's take another one of your calls. Hi there, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi there.
My name is Michael. Regular caller. I've spoken to you on a number of occasions about a few different things.
Hello, Michael.
Politics.
Michael, is your radio up or down?
No, it's down. I'm on a cell phone. I'm on a speakerphone right now. It's a little hard.
Yeah, get off the speakerphone because that you can't.
Is that better?
That's better. Thank you.
Okay. I'm calling because I'm listening to what this young man was just saying to you just now about this girlfriend and his life. In his life for 20 years. And I seem to realize what he's saying, and it makes me enlighten me about a few things that are going on in my own life. I have family members who are, they're my family. I can't get rid of them because they're my family, but I try to do things to kind of benefit and help them as a family, and I find that I'm being taken advantage of more often than not. And I really just needed to know that if I make this separation and this distance between us, that I'm doing it for my own self-preservation, and it's not a degree of selfishness. I don't think I'm a selfish person. I help everybody that I can. When people ask me for help, even strangers, without regard for a recompense for it. But I found that I'm putting myself out for people who are not returning the same thing. And it dawned on me at some point in time. I was taught by my mother to help all people, but I realized that everybody isn't given the same lessons.
Well, let me address it for you, Michael. Giving to get, which is what most people do, mm-hmm. you give because you want to get love. And then you learn you don't get love back because people see you as a giver and they don't think they have to respond. When you wake up to that, you say to yourself the following. I am betraying my friends. Right? Your phone's moving too much right now.
I'm listening.
Yeah, you say, I am betraying my friends. How are you betraying your friends? Everybody you give to, you lie to. Because you're giving to them, but you're saying, please give back. Now, what we want to do is clean that all up. We want you not to give to them to get back love. We want you not to give to them for a while. We want you to see what it's like to go on a giving diet. You know? And then not to put yourself out so much.
Well, that's what I'm doing right now.
Yeah, and that's a wonderful thing. Because what you're doing by doing that is giving to those very people a greater gift than if you were giving them the other way. Honesty. Real enough. The real Michael. That's a beautiful thing to offer people.
Well, when I say giving without expecting anything in return, my take on that is that as family, when you find somebody in need, especially your family members, that at a certain point you're obligated to help if you have the ability to help and the willingness to help, and I have both.
What would happen if you didn't help?
It's always been a one-way street.
What would happen if you didn't help?
Well, I've realized...
What if you happened? Let's say somebody comes by.
Don't help. I realize when I don't help, I get this animosity from them, this distance from them, like I'm not being family. But when I am being family, I'm taken advantage of.
Well, yeah, but okay, so let's go, Michael. Michael, so here's the deal. I know a woman, she's an island woman, she has a few hundred dollars. Her entire family has no money.
Mm-hmm.
So they always come to her for money. So she can't buy herself a dress. She wants to buy a dress, but her family needs money. So she works here in America, in New York,
mm-hmm.
and she slaves at her work. She makes like $8 an hour. And she wants to buy a dress, but she says to me, I can't buy the dress because my family needs the money. And her family, if she doesn't send the money, they get angry at her because
yeah.
they have learned
but
by getting angry
game.
At her. What?
It's a mind game. You see, if they get angry, it triggers her, and it's a manipulation game.
Yeah, so we step out of the manipulation so that we can really be good for our families. You got to stop the game.
Mm.
And you're doing it.
Yeah.
And suffer the guilt. Suffer the guilt because you shouldn't be guilty.
Well,
there
you know
is no shame.
With that, though, it's eating me up because I've had stomach disorders for like the last 5 years, easily the last 5 years. And I've discovered my stomach disorders are coming from me, as I heard you mention, a phrase you use, not being able to stomach what they're doing.
Exactly right.
And
that's,
when I got
that's
to that
right.
stage where I just said, you know what? I'm wiping my mind clear of this. I'm wiping my heart clear of this. I'm clearing my system out from this. In a matter of a couple of hours, I feel better than I have all week long. And I just want to know that I'm not being selfish.
Well, selfish is a funny word. What does selfish mean? I am taking care of myself regardless of the well-being of other people, at the cost of other people, or is selfish mean I am honoring myself as well as I am honoring them?
I was conditioned to believe that being selfish meant that you weren't willing to share or that you weren't willing to put yourself out for other people. But I've discovered over the last, I'm 51 years old, over the last 40 years, that's all I've done was put myself out for people.
Okay, now let me ask you this. Are they selfish?
I think that they're very selfish.
Right. So the ones who taught you about selfishness are the selfish ones.
Yeah.
So I guess the teachers have something to learn.
Yeah.
You're a good guy, Michaels. Keep up the fight.
Oh, I know I have to keep up the fight because if I don't, it's going to kill me.
It's
going
to hurt everybody.
Yeah.
Okay. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. What brave men. I love it. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, good. I heard the caller, the guy called himself Michael Archangel, and I specifically would like for you to address his issue because in the type of work that I do, I come across a lot of that anger in black men in this society.
And what kind of work do you do?
Well, I'm an advocate. I basically work with people, general problems that have to do with law or, you know, jobs.
Okay, so you're
like
constantly
that.
Running into the anger.
Constantly. And it is grown. And since, I can tell you this, I've broke it down to since Obama became president, there's been a backlash in the job market. A lot of these young black men, college educated, some not college, lose their jobs. Different things have happened on their workplaces. And this anger is rising. I don't know. You're the one to answer it because you're the psychologist. I mean, if they have a problem with their housing, I can help.
Well, you've got your finger on the pulse as well. But let me ask you something, not only about them. What about you? Are you getting more angry? Do you feel yourself getting more angry?
I'm angry at society because I feel it's not genuine.
That's right.
What is going on. And I feel that, I mean, personally, I know how to deal with every issue that comes my way.
Do you know how to deal with people not being genuine with you?
Oh, yeah. Because I maintain that I am God's perfect creation, and I go through life that way. And if I find that there is a wind blowing, I will stop in a tree. I make my life an analogy like the birds. They wake in the morning, and they chirp the Lord's name, and they go out and they find food. And they don't specifically toil for it. It's provided for them because they've kept that promise. So I try to keep them the promise of the universe, if you whatever you want to call it. And that's worked for me, and I'm 47 years old.
Well, thank you very much. What's your name, by the way?
My name is Richard.
Richard, I want to thank you very much for your insight. The growing aggression.
Could you elaborate on that a little bit?
What did you say?
For them, because I'm sure a lot of them are listening. A lot of people listen to you in their cabs and everything.
The growing wrath among the black people is what you're saying.
Yes, yeah, well, a lot of us listen to you because you are deep. And not that many people talk at the depth that you talk. And you talk from the heart. That's the thing. A lot of people intellectualize psychological issues. You do that, but you spin it back into the spirit. And that makes the whole big difference.
Oh, it takes a really sensitive man.
I appreciate you.
It takes a really sensitive man to recognize that, Michael, Richard. You know, Richard, I think, yes. Thank you, and I hope your perch is always a happy one.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling in. 212-209-2900. Birds, I like that. Birdie. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Hi, my name is Erica.
Hello, Erica.
And I was calling because I wanted to comment about what you said earlier about people's fears, whether people are afraid of their sexuality or are they afraid of their anger. And I think that people are afraid to admit what makes them happy.
Oh, very interesting. Let's hear this.
I think that people want to think that, you know, what society throws at them, that, okay, well, you're supposed to have this amount of money, you're supposed to dress this way, you're supposed to look this way, this is the type of person you're supposed to love, this is the type of person you're supposed to be attracted to, this type of job you're supposed to have. And they're afraid to say that, no, I don't want that. You know, this is what I want. And that can go towards who you're attracted to, your sexuality, what type of person you want to be with. And I think it affects people who are afraid to admit that. I have so many friends who they're in relationships, mainly with, you know, relationships. They're in relationships with one person, and they think that because that's who they're supposed to be with.
Well, what about you, Erica? What about yours? Do you find that you live the harmony of your own sexuality? Do you think that you are living your life as you want to, as your fantasy dictates to you?
No.
No, you stay away from it, right?
Yeah.
Because what are you afraid of? Tell me about it.
I'm afraid of...
You're afraid you're going to get carried away?
I'm afraid I'm going to get carried away. Isn't that interesting? And I won't be able to come back.
Yeah, that's what everybody feels about their passions, both sexuality and anger. They feel, if I ever let myself go near it, I'm going to get lost in this. And not to eroticize this, but is there a particular fantasy that you would love to just explore that you're really afraid of?
Oh, my God.
I'm not asking for confessions.
I understand. Well, there are things that I enjoy and I have in the past, and it embarrassed me so much that I decided I'm not going to do this anymore.
Fetishy kind of stuff?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I said I wasn't going to do it anymore, and the people who I deal with now, I don't say anything. I'm afraid to say how far I went there. And
yeah, so you have it as a secret as far how much you've indulged it, right?
Yes.
Uh-huh. You keep it as a secret. Well, if you had somebody who you really cared about, let's say you fell in love or you got married or something like that, would you tell your mate about this?
I would like to, but I feel that when I have come out and been honest, and not in a way of it's a turn on, let me say this because it sounds sexy or whatever, mm-hmm. but to be generally honest, I've just gotten kind of negative feedback.
Sure.
They start to look at you a certain way.
So you present yourself as a lot purer than you really are.
I guess you can say so.
So now what you're doing is you're saying to yourself, I'd like to meet a person who could love me in all of my vicissitudes, in all of my variations, in all of my parts. And part of that may be a little kinky, fetishy stuff mm-hmm. that I like to also admit to. And maybe someday, if you're really lucky, you'll meet that person and be able to present them with your real self. But it may be that you don't want to. It may be that you want to keep it private. It may be you're not ready for that yet.
And I've even had people see me as they like me, but maybe because I don't fall into a standard that they should be attracted to, that I've been treated as a fetish.
You get treated as a fetish? What kind of a fetish? As a dominatrix?
Well,
like
a plus-size fetish.
So you're a plus-size fetish, meaning, and the word plus-size is a fetishistic term.
Mm-hmm.
That means, you know, and for people to know, could you explain to people what that means?
Well, you know, like a big girl.
Somebody who carries more weight.
Exactly.
Physical weight than other people. And could you tell me this, because I know there are a lot of people listening who would find it intriguing. As a big girl, as somebody who could be packing an extra 40, 50 pounds,
mm-hmm.
do you find that there is a significant bunch of men who are very attracted to that because of the plus size?
I think there are, I find that there are some men who definitely treat it as a fetish, as not just so much, oh, she's attractive, you know, or they date all types of women and just want to be, you know, she's just as beautiful as another one. But there are people who, it's not even about me, it's about, like, the fat.
Yeah, indirectly.
Yeah, and that's freaky.
That bothers you.
Yeah.
So you would love to find somebody who likes both.
Yeah, who just likes me.
You the way you are. I hear. You're a lovely person.
Oh, thank you.
I am sure you're going to find some way of finding peace with this, Erica.
And just a note, the weird thing about it is most of the guys who are like that are very thin.
Yes, usually they're very, very thin.
Yeah, so I don't, that's kind of weird.
Well, what do you think makes that happen? Why do very thin men, now I knew there was a, I knew from Amsterdam, Holland, Dutch men usually found plus-sized women very attractive, and these were very thin men.
Mm-hmm.
Not all Dutchmen, but there was a group of them that I knew of. So I wonder why men who have so little weight, who are thin, you know, Stephanie, this might be very interesting. What do you think of the idea that it's about serotonin? What do you think? We're just going to think this through the way Stephanie and I do. So if the woman carries all of that serotonin and the man is thin, what is the man missing if he's very thin? What hormones are he missing or what neurotransmitters?
He may be missing estrogen too.
Right, because men carry estrogen.
We all produce hormones, obviously different levels of it.
Uh-huh.
And so a thin man may not produce enough estrogen. And
how would that make him feel? What would be the general mood that he would walk through? Kind of a depression?
I think a slight kind of low energy or a bit of a flatness, maybe.
A flatness. And then he meets somebody who is carrying a lot, and he gets associated to it, and in a way it turns him on. He indulges himself. So it could be a way of men balancing themselves. It could be chemical balance. It's a funny thing.
Interesting.
It is interesting. I have to do a little more work on that. Thank you very much for calling
us. No problem. Thank you.
Erica, thank you. 212-209-2900. The number of subjects that we come across. Yes, fetishes. Fetishes. Fetishistic. Fetishoon. Fetishes are about secrets. You have some part of you that says, I like only this thing. You've got to wear open-toed shoes. You know what I mean? In order to make me feel energetic, alive, turned on. So people who are generally attracted to fetishes are saying, I need a little extra energy to make me feel a spark. For some people, it's finding variation. For some people, it's making sure you never repeat the same thing twice. For other people, it's finding clothing. You know? But I think it's all about sparking up your chemistry. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hello there. 212-209-2900. We'll take one more call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello. Yes, you're on the air.
How are you doing? I just want to touch on the topic of selfishness.
Yes, what about that topic?
I think that we are innately born selfish, whether I always have a conversation with my friends said how a parent is selfish in taking care of their kids because hoping that one day when they could get older, the kid will, you know, when you get up to 80, 90, you're sitting up there in the house by yourself, your kid will take care of you. You know, they'll say, is a mother or a parent responsibility to do that? But there's some selfishness in that because we actually don't have to do it. And that's what I think.
That's pretty good perception because you're right. I mean, many parents now who are living to their 80s are now looking forward to their children taking care of them. So that puts that child in two spots. The child... A 40-year-old child has to take care of their family, their kids, and they have to take care of their parents at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Is it wrong to hope for that?
Right. And the other thing I wanted to point to the young lady that just speak, regardless or what you call it, her size.
Erica, yes.
I'm from Jamaica, and the men in Jamaica, they're like a big woman.
Uh-huh.
Not me particularly, but I think that it's a cultural thing. It can be a cultural thing. In Jamaica, it's a cultural thing.
And the men in Jamaica are generally very thin, aren't they?
Right, and they're like a big
woman. They're lean, yes.
Yeah. So, you know.
So cultural could be chemical as well. You see, cultural could be I'm missing something and you can give it to me because you're a partner who's got this other chemistry.
Right.
You see,
right.
It's more than just an idea. It works.
Right. And also we like the opposite. I found in my life that we like the opposite of who we are. So if we are tall, we like short. If we're big, we like small. If we're fat, we like, well, shouldn't use the word fat, but if we're, you know, we like slender people. That's what I found.
Well, what about you? What do you like?
You know, these days I've been working on myself, trying to really figure out what I like, and I'm going back and forth in, you know, if I'm trying to try not to get caught up into society and this model idea, so I'm trying to be realistic.
Well, that's quite beautiful. What's your name?
My name is Junior.
Junior, you know, Junior, it seems like you're coming into becoming your own man. It seems like all your life you've been a junior. You know, you've been one step below being your own man, and now you're stepping into it. Now you're saying, wait, I don't need those stereotypes. I don't need to follow any rules. I want to go by my heart. And that sounds terrific.
And that's good. And also I'm found that I'm also can be left out by doing that too, because I'm protecting myself because I'm not sure if it's society, what I'm seeing in front of me, or it's the real, what I really like. So it takes, the process become longer, longer process by me selecting someone.
Well,
because I'm also protecting myself by doing that, because I'm not sure if I'm doing the right thing or not. But I think it's part of the process of me identifying and learning about me and what I like and what is good for me.
Well, you're a voyager, Junior. I'm really glad to hear you're on the path. Thank you for calling in.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you. One more call, if we can. 212-209-2900. Armand DeMille. What nice people. Hi, let's take one more call.
Hi, Armand.
Hi there.
Hi. Oh, okay, I got through. I've been listening to you for, I don't know, maybe 15 years.
Wow.
It's amazing I'm getting through to you. And I think your show is fabulous.
What's your name?
And my name is Laura.
Laura, welcome.
Thank you. And I recently lost my son. He was 23 years old. It was a year ago. And it was to drug addiction. And actually, I lost all my siblings to drug addiction. And when my son, he had Tourette syndrome growing up, and then he had an accident where he lost an eye. And that's what started him on the path of using drugs. And he just couldn't stand any pain anymore, because the Tourette gave him pain in his muscles from twitching, and then the eye was very painful.
Laura, this is tragic. We have about 1 minute. How are you getting through this?
Well, I do, you know, the thing I want to touch on is that you were talking about shame. And in the past, I used to feel ashamed to say, people would say, how's your sister? How's your brother? How's your other sister? And I would feel so ashamed to say they died, because I wouldn't know what to say of what. And I'm not ashamed anymore. I say my son, at the age of 23, passed away. He was sick. And that stops everybody from asking me. If I was willing to share, I would have said he died of cancer. But he died of drug addiction. And if they go further with it, it's not that I'm ashamed. I feel like it's our private thing.
I got you,
Laura. I miss him so much.
Yes, I do.
And it's brought up all this other stuff. And I am the black sheep in the family. I'm 60 years old. And I feel like this person who's just walked aside everybody in my family.
Okay, Laura,
so I
Laura.
Can take care of them.
Laura, you're a white sheep with me. You're no black sheep in the family. And in my family, you're a white sheep. And I thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you, Armand.
Sure. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. We have to be going. I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m.
Merhaba, I'm Barbara Nimriyazis. What are Muslims writing, thinking, doing? What are today's Arabs contributing to civilization? Tahrir on WBAI brings you new voices from your neighborhoods and around the world. Join us Tuesdays, 7 p.m.